Good evening and welcome to the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Norma Walden, Chair of the Club's International Relations Forum and your chair for today. We also welcome our listeners on radio and our audience here, and we invite our entire audience to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. It is my pleasure to present our speakers, who are all members of the Gregg family. They have enjoyed successful careers, and all of them gave back to their communities and their world through volunteer work. They believe their volunteer experiences enhanced their careers, maybe even leading to those dream jobs we all seek. Rather than opening with four introductions right now, we think it will be more meaningful for you if I make the first introduction, and then the Gregg family members will briefly introduce one another at the appropriate times. We'll begin with the family matriarch, Janet Gregg.
My goodness.
She is a returned Peace Corps volunteer who served in India. She retired from State Farm Insurance as an agent and as an agency field executive. She is currently a board member of One World Children's Fund and treasurer of the National Peace Corps Association. Janet Gregg, welcome.
Thank you so much, Norma. I thought it might be interesting to start with a short explanation of how an invitation for one person to speak changed into a group. But first, I graduated from Cal in June of 1966, and 2 weeks later found myself on a plane to Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts, where I began a three-month training program for Peace Corps service in India. And 3 months after that, I was on a plane to South India with nothing more than a hope and a prayer about an experience ahead of me. And I can only say that it was incredibly transformative, both for myself and, I hope, for the people with whom I worked. In thinking about the assignment this evening, I realized that each person in my immediate family has had their career impacted by volunteering. And since three of them, the younger ones, are younger than my husband and I asked for permission to expand the panel to include all of us so that those of you who are younger than I might feel that the remarks are particularly pertinent to you. And thank you also to the Commonwealth Club for this opportunity. I think it's rare for a family to have the opportunity to sit down and have a conversation over a period of weeks about what's been important to you and how it could have and has transformed your lives. So the conversation that we've had as a group, our son is missing this evening, has been really quite special. And I think when we get to the end of this evening and you all have a chance to ask questions or to make comments, that you will round out the substance of what it has been a really very nice conversation that we've had. Here's what we expect from our hour together. We're going to take some time to introduce ourselves, as Norma said, and it will be a little bit more in-depth than the blurb you've got from the club. We have three messages we'd like to leave you with. First, that volunteering can lead to really wonderful opportunities, but it's really a quick fix, rarely a quick fix to finding a perfect job. Volunteering, wherever it is, greatly expands your toolbox of skills and experiences. And good volunteering experiences have to be a two-way street, good for you and good for the organization for whom you are volunteering. As Norma said, at the end of our presentation, there will be questions and answers, and we'll move the mic over, and you can come up and ask your questions rather than write anything out. Before we start, we'd like to know why you're here. So I've got three quick questions. And with a raise of hands, just let us know a little bit about what interested you in this topic. Are you here because you're looking for volunteer opportunities, interested in the Peace Corps, or some other volunteering experience? Jessica's going to count a bit, and those of you who are on the radio will get a sense of what these numbers look like. Are you actively involved in volunteering and simply wanted to hear what we had to say? Okay. Looks maybe about the same number. And the last one is, are you actively looking for permanent work and wanted to learn how volunteering could help you with that? Okay, good number.
An equal third.
Jess?
Yes, so it looked like we got the most votes for, or you're here because you're looking for volunteer opportunities and interested in the Peace Corps, and then about 20 each for being actively involved in volunteering and wanting to hear the discussion, and those that are actively looking for a volunteer position that could turn into a permanent job.
Thanks. So now we'll introduce ourselves. Libby?
Hi. I am Libby DeMeo. I am a mother of two school-aged children, 8 and 10. I have a Bachelor of Arts in Organizational Studies from Scripps College down in Southern California. And I now run a boutique consulting firm in San Carlos specializing in how individuals and organizations do work effectively together and ideally improve the efficiency of how people work and gain their full potential. Prior to starting the DeMeo Group, I actually co-founded a web design and development company and became the Senior Vice President of Operations. We subsequently sold that company, so I was there in the startup and went through acquisition and left when we were 600 people. So I've gone back to a much smaller world. My volunteering started during my undergraduate program at Scripps College through student government and roles on the Board of Trustees. And some of my current volunteering activities, I'm the co-chair of the Green Team at the local elementary school as we're working to integrate organic gardens into the science curriculum for our children. I've also done a number of task-based volunteering through an organization called Spark.com, which is an online community enabling micro-volunteering. So, for example, in April, I helped a overwhelmed inner-city Chicago school teacher research grants so she could get her first computer into her classroom. So that was something I actually did in my pajamas in the evening. But within an hour, could do some meaningful work and impacted her, and I do believe she now actually has a computer. So it was fun and interesting and helped me manage my limited time. And then this fall, I'm planning a event for a San Mateo County-based organization called Teen Talk that's looking to build awareness as well as raise critical funds as they're trying to spread the word about the sex education curriculum that they've developed and that actually our public schools rely on. So that gives you a smattering of what I'm up to.
Great. I'm Jessica Manzi. I'm a transportation planner and engineer by training, and I'm currently working in that field for the city of Redwood City. I began volunteering in high school, and after graduating with a degree in civil engineering, I became a volunteer in the Peace Corps and taught high school math for 2 years in West Africa and Benin. Since then, most of my volunteering has really focused around my professional life and encouraging girls and women to pursue careers in transportation and engineering. When I was in graduate school, I joined the board of the Women's Transportation Seminar and organized professional development events in that capacity. And since then, I've volunteered in elementary and high school after-school clubs to talk about my experience as a traffic engineer through a program called TechBridge, whose mission is to promote girls' interests in science and technology and engineering fields. And in addition to that, I have two young daughters and volunteer in the school's PTA.
So, oh yeah, you're going to go and then I'm going to add, Chris.
You're going to? Okay.
Sorry.
It's hard to get a family organized. I'm Wiley Gregg. I'm Janet's husband, and I retired about 6 years ago as a land use economist and market analyst. I was head of a global research program for real estate markets around the world for Deutsche Bank, I never expected to end up as a banker, but that's the way it worked. And since retiring, I've just retired again. I just stepped down as chairman of the board for One World Children's Fund, which is a small nonprofit based in the Presidio here, and I'm still on the board of a couple of investment companies in the Bay Area and one nonprofit organization, so it's hard to kick the habit. My volunteering started with Peace Corps, which I got into, being perfectly frank, because as an English major graduating in 1966, I didn't have a clue what I was suited for. I knew I wasn't going to be a teacher, and none of the employers I talked with seemed to have a clue either as to what I was good for. I ran into a recruiter that came to my college, and India sounded really interesting. My dad had been born there, and so that started a long adventure. I think we'll have a chance to talk about a little bit since then. I think our family is characterized by twists and turns in their careers, which may be not so unusual, but all I can say is I went from not really knowing what I was good for and what my career to be, to meeting Janet, getting married a year into our Peace Corps tour in Madras, and then further work overseas for CARE, where we lived in India to start with, and then Afghanistan, and finally Jordan in the Middle East, which led to graduate school and city planning, the closest thing I could find to community economic development, and then that led me into finance. So all of those things led to ultimately a work for a series of consulting firms, and then ultimately a firm that was bought by Deutsche Bank.
Great. Now I'll introduce my brother, who is not here, who was actually born in Amman, Jordan, on their tour with CARE. He's sorry he can't be here, but work has called, and he's out of town. Our brother Chris graduated from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo with a degree in nutritional sciences. Now, as in then, the economy was rotten, and upon graduating, he came home and moved into the house, as did I when I graduated, and got settled and started looking around and trying to figure out what opportunities was there, but was committed to being a nutritionist and got scrappy and found a researcher at Stanford who was looking for an intern. It was an unpaid position, but it was at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital, and it gave him tangible opportunity to practice what he loved to do and believed he wanted to do. So he gave 6 months of his life to this position, unpaid. But the day they actually opened a rec for a full-time position, he was there and he got the job. And so he had three very successful years at Packard, which was then when he actually met a number of pharmaceutical sales individuals, which has become his profession, which is his calling. It is absolutely who he is and what he loves to do. So he's had a very happy career doing that. And he continues to volunteer for the Cystic Fibrosis Research Institute, really due to the fact that actually in his early days at Stanford, became very good friends with a patient at Stanford who had CF. And has continued that work and that research. So a little bit about Christopher, and we'll go in more later.
And just a little bit about my own volunteering path, because it relates to my work. My first real volunteering job was in the public service arena as a Peace Corps volunteer. And in my State Farm insurance agency, I had plaques on the wall, like, you know, you do, Berkeley, 1966, Peace Corps, 1966, and then probably something from State Farm. And most clients would sit down, and we'd start talking, and they'd look, and they'd say, Berkeley, Peace Corps, insurance? And how does that happen? And we'd laugh, sort of like you're laughing. And then one time, a client sat across from me and said, well, anyway, we had a conversation that went a little bit deeper. And he said, I see the link. And I said, tell me. And he said, A degree from Berkeley during the 60s suggests a level of social awareness and commitment. Peace Corps is a perfect example of that commitment. And as an insurance policy is pulling a community of people together who face the same risks, auto insurance, for example, where many put a bit of money on the table so that a few who really need it will benefit, and you're there to facilitate that help. He connected the dots for me. I had been following what mattered to me the most, being of service and engaged with others. As Norma said, today I am on the board of the National Peace Corps Association, One World Children's Fund, as well as board at my church. All of these experiences in their own ways not only provide opportunities to give, but also present challenges and opportunities for me to grow and learn. So that's who we are. One of the first things we did was spend a little bit of time defining what we thought volunteering meant. And we decided that it means giving of your time and your talents in service to a larger purpose. And often the giving can be spurred by a variety of forces. It can be a poor economy, when jobs are tight, a change in the location of where you live, and when you get to the new spot, urging you out into learning more about the community that's new to you. Or you're looking for a new career. You have a job, but you want to change, and you're going to volunteer in places that you think are of interest to you. Or perhaps you're facing retirement or an empty nest, or you just have more free time and you want to connect with the people around you. The way to do that, basically, you're working on enhancing the puzzle pieces that will ultimately become your life story. And this is done through a variety of organizations. Some of them are unpaid, like small businesses or nonprofit organizations. Paid internships, large corporations will take you on for a small stint in the summer if you're a college student and give you a small stipend. Or larger NGOs will also take you on with perhaps a small stipend. Or public service work, like three of us did with Peace Corps. Or it could be AmeriCorps or Teach for America. And these provide a modest stipend as well as a readjustment allowance, which means they give you a little bit of money so when you come back to the real world, you can work at finding a job. So that's how we defined volunteering, and those are the kinds of organizations that one encounters when one's looking for a volunteering opportunity. Libby, you're going to speak to the first point.
Yes, so I thought I'd kick us off talking about how volunteering can lead to great opportunities, but rarely is it a quick fix to finding that dream job. But as I prepared for this, I spent a fair amount of time reflecting on my volunteer experiences and my professional experience over the past two decades, and really was actually taken aback by how transformative my early volunteering experiences at Scripps have absolutely influenced who I am, how I look at the world, how I tackle problems, how I work as a team. And honestly, I'm actually sort of tickled by it because I don't think I would have had the professional experiences I had I not done what I did at Scripps. So the stars were aligned for me. So let me tell you, though, a little bit about those experiences. I'm one to make my decisions with simple characteristics. In all honesty, I was enticed into student government with the carrot that by becoming dorm president, I could stay in the dorm that I was in my freshman year, so I could stay in that same beautiful spot my sophomore year, and I'd get first pick at any room in the dorm. So I said, position sounds interesting, was a little nervous because honestly, as a first-year student in my first semester, having to make the decision to say, yes, I'm going to take on this responsibility to take on this organization was a bit much, but I'm like, hey, I'm going to have a pretty room with a great balcony, so why not? So I did it. And This experience as dorm president for me was a critical foray into learning how organizations work, managing people, managing committees, many individuals who, some I knew, but many who I didn't know their personalities, taking over an operating budget, having many opinionated souls on a committee, and having to navigate sort of how we made decisions and gained consensus. So it was important to me, and then that actually helped me transition into a number of student positions on Board of Trustee committees. So actually over 3 years I served on probably four different Board of Trustees committees and then stayed on and was elected to the recent Alumna Trustee. So I had a unique opportunity of working with the Board of Trustees for five consecutive years. You know, in my early 20s, that was a huge opportunity for me as I look back. It was a great investment of my time, but I learned so much from it. I learned, first and foremost, to respect and appreciate all aspects of an organization. The Buildings and Grounds Committee was just as important as the Finance Committee because, you know what, if the sprinklers went on at 6 a.m. and the leaf blowers were blowing quickly or loudly, parents would complain and the CFO would hear it. I also participated in a very valuable strategic planning process and learned how critical it is to have the right facilitator navigating that process for such a large constituent-based organization. Watching how large committees of these different constituents came to a common table, discussed, debated, and came to agreement on the vision of an organization for the next 10 years. And at that time, Scripps as a women's college was really debating, are they a women's college, are they not? And how, you know, and that is foundational to the mission of that organization. So that was an invaluable experience for me. I learned each of us comes to the table with a different set of experiences and lenses and personal lenses to how to view the problem. No one is right or wrong, but it's how we navigate those individual views and perspectives together to get to consensus and a decision is how an organization, whether you're for-profit or nonprofit, whether or not the organization's going to move forward or be stuck in the muck. I learned individual contributors are just as important as effective managers to an organization. And now I have a deep-wedded commitment to the education of women in a women's only institution and Scripps. But I also personally benefited from the relationships, the deep relationships I made with the staff of Scripps College, with the Board of Trustees, with my fellow alumni that come from such a wide and diverse background, which is one of the benefits I see in volunteering because we might be coming together outside of our native industry but are coming together with a common focus and goal as to where we're going to be going and how to influence this group. So that diverse population of references and relationships has really helped me as my career has twisted and turned and as I've explored things and wanted to bounce ideas off of people. It's been invaluable. So as I mentioned, when I started volunteering at Scripps, I had a rather short-term goals. Yet in hindsight, I can now see how those experiences really culminated in a way for me to see the world with a unique lens, which has helped me to succeed as an executive, which I never would have expected, as a team member, and an entrepreneur. I encourage each of you to use an upcoming volunteer experience to develop a new skill or explore a new field. Right now, I'm tackling fundraising opportunities to test my interest as early exploration of a career change for me. But time will tell if I go down that path. But I know right now I'm helping an organization raise critical funds so that they can continue to have an impact in our community. So I see that as a win-win. So now I'll open it up to my family members to add some of their thoughts.
Well, we have an exception right away on the idea that volunteering doesn't immediately lead to a job. In the case of our son, who is, as you heard earlier, volunteered for 6 months, and that turned into his first paying job in his career, and clearly was formative. But I think for most of the rest of us, it's building foundations or it's providing guidance for what you really want to do. It's a great testing ground for that.
And And I think our experience at One World Children's Fund, which has a staff of, well, now three people, but has had just a staff of two, and it's run by a cohort of lots of volunteers. And when we had raised the funds we needed to add a program officer, the person that got that job was someone who'd been doing it for us as an intern and a volunteer. And she was doing a fabulous job, and we were sorry we didn't have the funds to pay her. But it's a good example of doing what you want to do, doing what you're good at, and being at the right place at the right time. So, again, sort of contrary to what most of us have done, but it does happen. Jess, you want to move on?
Sure. Now I'd like to speak a little bit about our second point, which is that volunteering greatly expands your personal toolbox. You may recall from my introduction that I served as a high school math teacher in the Peace Corps in West Africa. And when I went into the Peace Corps, I had two sort of goals in mind. One was to come out with French as a second language, and the second was to try teaching as a possible profession. Well, after teaching for 2 years, I came out with a nice African French accent. And I discovered that really high school is probably not where I want to spend the rest of my career. So I got two great things out of my Peace Corps experience. But in looking back, I also realized that there are a number of other tools that I gained from that experience. And the one that I think has been most influential for me is developing a sense of cultural fluency, this understanding that how one's own background and culture really shapes how you perceive a situation and your interactions. And so to illustrate that, I'd like to talk about one story from my time in the Peace Corps. And this took place in my second year of volunteering during the rainy season. And it was after the afternoon siesta, and I finished my nap and had my lunch and was getting ready to pack up my bag to go back to school, and a rain cloud had passed into the area, and it quietly started to rain. And so I put on my raincoat and grabbed my umbrella and headed out the door to school. And was walking over there, which is right next door, which is really convenient. And as I was walking, wondering to myself, well, how many people are actually going to be at school since it's raining? And I walked in, and I was walking by the classrooms getting to my class, and looked in, and you'd see, two or three kids in the classroom, no teachers. But when I got to my classroom, it was full. You know, at this point, the kids had understood that their American teacher is a little different than everybody else. And so on days when other people wouldn't be at school, I would be there. So there they were, sitting and waiting for me, and I entered the classroom and started teaching. Well, shortly after starting, the rain started to pick up. And shortly after the rain started to pick up, the power went out. And so the power went out, and then the kids who were sitting in the seats next to the windows didn't have glass, it was just an opening, they closed the wooden shutters so that their notebooks wouldn't get wet, because those were the only books that they had. So the shutters got closed and the power's out, and so the only light coming into the classroom is from the windows in the other side of the room that's off a breezeway, so not a whole lot of light. But once we got settled again, I started teaching. Well, at that point, the rain really started coming down. And in West Africa, our classrooms had corrugated metal roofs. And so as you can imagine, the torrential downpour on the corrugated metal roofs, well, nobody could hear anything. And so I'm relegated to simply writing out the lesson plan on the board, which is part of what I normally do, but no ability to explain anything. And meanwhile, the kids, remember, can't see the board because the power's gone out and the windows are closed. So this was my second year of teaching, and it wasn't until that experience that I really realized, well, that's why nobody comes to school on a rainy day. And so that really hit it home, and that experience, I'm constantly reminded of that in working in the public sector. A number of my coworkers and all the constituents that we deal with in the city government come from all over the world. And having that understanding that people come to situations with a different background and a different perspective is so important as you're trying to find solutions to what can be tricky problems. And I would just add from that, I did pick up other tools, obviously, from my time in the Peace Corps, such as public speaking or being able to adapt to change and one's ability to deal with adversity. These are all tools that I've added to my personal toolbox and things that you don't necessarily go into a volunteering situation expecting to get out of it, but they are things that you gain from it, and it can be so important in making you successful, either in finding your dream job or working in your dream job.
One of the things that most Peace Corps volunteers do and are urged to do is to keep a journal in which you record what's happened to you that day and exactly what you did and what you were expected to do and how you felt about what you had been asked to do, and you pay attention to what pleases you, and you pay attention to what has annoyed you, and it gives you a chance to informally, after the fact, pick up a book and read your own musings and learn about what it is that you do best and what you like. So no matter where you are, I think keeping a very simple journal is a really good tool that enhances your ability to learn about yourself, because one of the goals of volunteering is not only to give, but to also learn about what your talents are and what you're bringing to the table and what you like. And I think that journaling expectation was particularly helpful.
So one example I thought I'd give as a toolbox, an item I added to my toolbox, was during this time on the Board of Trustees or as a student representative on this board committee during the strategic planning process. I won't go too in-depth to the core of the issue, but Scripps has a residential dining component. So the students eat on campus. And at that time, half of the dining halls actually, which really looked like mansions, actually had the dining facilities within the facilities. But as you can understand, from an economic perspective, it was difficult for the college to sustain. At that point, there were five different dining halls. It didn't make sense for a population of 600 students. So one of the committees that I was on was analyzing this, and I found that the committee had gotten to a stalemate because a lot of the alumnas and the alumna trustees had a clear relationship of their experience at Scripps with that residential dining experience, being able to walk downstairs and to have breakfast with your sisters and dinner. It was different. Yet, in my experience as a current student, half of us had it and half of us didn't. And I sat there struggling on the committee, really trying to figure out, okay, what can we do to change the conversation? At that point, it was a bit of a contentious relationship between myself and the alumna trustee, who had firm belief that we were going to keep the residential dining as it was. And one morning, I actually got the idea, I'm going to create a quick survey. And those were the days before we had, you know, really the internet and all these great technology tools. So I wrote up a survey, I photocopied it, I ran to one dining hall that had that was residential, and then that evening I took the same survey to the students that were having to come together because they didn't have the residential dining option for themselves. And that evening, I crunched the data, I analyzed it, and lo and behold, those that had the experience in their dorm, they loved it. But those that didn't, coming together, they had a different experience, and they still felt a sense of community. So I came and I just presented the results to the committee and said, hey, you know, I just wanted to add this information. Let's look back and reflect on what the experience is today. And as I was giving the report, watching the facial expressions of the chairwoman, her face softened. And our relationship, our working relationship, changed from that day forward, and she became a personal advocate for me. And what I learned is, you know, at times, you know, the value of taking your ego out of the issue and coming at it in a different way. But it was one of those ones that, you know, I'm quite proud of, and honestly, the dining facility today is phenomenal. But it's fun to look back and say, I changed this moment in time, and it was fun, and the students benefit from it. And
yeah. One of the great things about any job, if it's a good job, is that it forces you to change and stretch your abilities, moves you in different directions, and that certainly happened. It started for me in Peace Corps. I was trained to be a euphemistically somewhat called a sanitary engineer, which was I was to promote using toilets with a flush toilet and treating waste in villages that had no wastewater capacity. The only difficulty was this was a program designed in North India, which was much more advanced than the area I was sent in the South. Got there, there was no piped water. No one was particularly interested in walking a long distance to a well to get water and then pour it down a hole. And so I realized my job didn't make much sense. And I was lucky in that my employer, which was Peace Corps, took a fairly experimental posture to this thing and basically said, what are you going to do? And I had a chance to look around. I found a group of people that were bringing in well drilling equipment to make water wells in the north in areas that had no, that were being badly affected by drought. And so I switched. I moved myself over and convinced Peace Corps that it was of interest to them as a potential career, a potential program area in the future. About a year after that, Janet and I decided to get married, and she was in the South, I was in the North, so I started looking for things I could do in the South. The needs there were, again, quite different from the North, and but there was a need for constructing big, open agricultural wells, which required a very different technology. But luckily, I realized I could find people in the local economy who did all of the things necessary to make these wells work, and also found money in the government that wasn't being used to finance the wells, and so was able to put that together and started a new program. Part of this exercise was getting funding from an NGO, which turned out to be CARE, and all of a sudden my writing, my English background, helped me with that in terms of putting a proposal together. So in the end of the exercise, I discovered I really had a few entrepreneurial genes that I could that I enjoyed using, and that my communication skills really were coming in handy. Peace Corps ended up adopting that as a future program area, and I ended up getting a job with CARE. But they sent me to Afghanistan instead. But anyway, so it's all this, it's stretch to develop new skills all comes together.
All right, you want to speak to the third topic, which sure. is volunteering is a two-way street?
Yeah, and I think this is really important because speaking as an employer who started an internship program that worked very badly, I have to say there wasn't a real appreciation of how much time and effort an organization really needed to go into running a good one. And so we all really feel that a good volunteering experience needs to be a two-way street. You don't get much benefit from doing menial tasks for an organization that doesn't know what to do with you and won't give you any opportunity to show them what you can do. You want to look for situations where you have a chance to make a meaningful contribution to the organization you're volunteering with, and they in turn feel a responsibility to give you experience, training, or at least a job that is meaningful to you. It's a matter of mutual respect, and it really does take work and planning on both sides. Over my career, I've been on both sides of that relationship and have made maybe more than my share of mistakes. I've also seen some great opportunity, great employment and volunteer experiences. California law, for those of you that are operating or planning to stay in California, are pretty explicit that unpaid intern positions in the state must primarily benefit the volunteer or intern, not the employer. And there wouldn't be, if there were no benefits for the employer, there wouldn't be many of these positions opened up. But it's significant that, again, primarily in unpaid areas, The benefit is expected to be primarily for the intern. A good example from my experience, and this is really only one limited example of a good internship program, was one that One World Children's Fund put together. I didn't when I was there, but I'm pleased the organization did. One World is a small nonprofit that helps individuals raise funds to support local child welfare programs in their local areas. It depends heavily on volunteers, as Janet mentioned, and many of these volunteers are pretty impressive. I'd say the majority are young professionals. They've lived or worked in other countries. Many speak more than English and have actual working experience overseas. So a pretty high-powered group. And the majority put in an enormous amount of effort on a pure unpaid volunteer basis. Most are also in between jobs looking for a way to develop their careers in some aspect of economic or social development. The reason this program, I think, is such a good example is that it requires a commitment. It's pretty explicit up front, of 3 months of part-time work on an unpaid basis to work on an important project, typically something that the organization itself didn't have staff time to do. The actual assignment is agreed between the organization and the fellows before they start, as is the final product to be produced. And that product is presented at the end to the staff, the board, volunteers who are involved, and if they're outside mentors involved, to them as well. They provide feedback back to the fellows as to what seems to work, what doesn't work. It's just, I mean, during the time that the fellows are working, they're expected to sit in or welcome to sit in on working committees, on regular staff meetings, and in the end, really feel part of the organization. All the exit interviews that we do, I'd say of the most common comment we get back from the fellows is that it's the best internship program they've ever experienced. And I think it's just because the work is meaningful, they're clearly valued, the work is important, and they're part of something. If you're a person who thrives on unstructured situations and end up working for an organization that gives you space to create your own job, great. I mean, it's a great chance to prove yourself, even if the organization doesn't have something clearly outlined in mind. My Peace Corps experience was very much that way, and I'm still grateful to Peace Corps for letting me change programs and find something I really wanted to do. In a perfect world, when you're evaluating an employment or intern opportunity, you'd like to be able to ask, what is my value added for this organization? What am I going to bring to this organization that will be of real value to them? As well as, what are they going to do to help my personal development in exchange for the time and effort I give them? It often isn't a perfect world, and you may not know how you'll create value exactly for your employer. You should be ready to give it your best efforts, however, and know that or have some indications that they're really going to support you in whatever the activity is going forward. So it's like any relationship is give and take, and that needs to be there.
Great. Looking at the clock, I think it's time to move that microphone over to the center aisle, and those of you who have questions should come forward. As Wiley was talking, I was thinking we were at a meeting not too long ago, and one of the people that was speaking, who was also a returned Peace Corps volunteer, said that the single thing that he thought that he learned and taken away from his Peace Corps experience was an incredible ability to deal with ambiguity. And I have to say, I've given that a lot of thought since I heard that statement. And the ability to deal with ambiguity is really, I think, one of the most important gifts that a volunteer experience can bring to you. That often the organization may think of how best to use you when you arrive, and maybe the person who designed the program isn't there. Then you have to figure out how to make it work. And so ambiguity is a reality. And volunteering, I think, no matter for whom you're volunteering, can help you develop that skill. So questions?
And our quick thanks to each of our speakers for this inspiring presentation. We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program of the Commonwealth Club of California, and you are listening to How Volunteering Can Lead to a Dream Job with Wiley and Janet Gregg and their daughters Libby DeMayo and Jessica Manzi. So we'll welcome your audience questions for the Greggs.
Hi, first I want to give you a huge validation for your beautiful presentation. I could see there was a lot of work and wonderful organization put into it, so I think that was great. Do you have any other places where one might see about volunteering than is on this list? And also, do you have a rough percentage of how many people get a paying job out of the place where they're volunteering?
Unfortunately, I think the statistics are probably... Today, so much of how you get that job is about who you know and about the relationships. And actually, I mean, right now, as I'm building my business, it's absolutely about pounding the pavement and talking to your network and talking to individuals and letting them know what you're actively looking for and doing. I would recommend, I mean, we've got a couple on there. You know, taproot.org is a wonderful organization where you actually work with, you're a volunteer, but they've got project-based work, so you can be part of a broader team and ideally expand who you're working with.
I have no...
There's lots of opportunity.
Volunteer Center.
There's right,
and that's on the list. I think what she's talking about is a list that it's at the back of the room, so when you go out, it lists, I think, four or five different organizations.
And also, I'm a tutor of English, French, German, and Spanish, and I speak Italian, too, but I haven't taught it yet. I used to very easily get students for many years, mostly from university flyers, but 10, 12 years ago that almost stopped. It's been really hard to get students, and other kinds of jobs have been very hard to get. Do you have any ideas of someone who knows these languages?
Not off the top of my head, but I'll give us a minute to think about it, and before we leave, we can circle back.
I think as a general comment, though, I mean, I was going to apologize that so many of our stories were related to just Peace Corps. And, you know, since Peace Corps was created, it's been 50 years at this point, I mean, there's been an absolute explosion of other organizations doing similar kinds of work. I think Peace Corps is probably on the long end of the volunteer time frame, and it's still a two-year commitment. There are lots of other opportunities that go from a few weeks up to a year to 2 years again, but all of those organizations need language skills, and I think you think in terms of the business world as well. So it may be just changing your focus, your target, to look for students. I don't mean to underestimate how challenging it can be, but I think, you know, there's certainly...
Someone mentioned there's companies and organizations that may need their employers to know English better, for example, or get their accents better. I don't know.
So there's two names come to mind: Global English, and then also Fox Translate are two organizations. And I'll circle back with you, but just Fox Translate. Hi.
Hi. Good evening. Thank you again. But I have a question about all of you seem very committed to helping other people or getting outside yourselves. So you mentioned your church organization. You started volunteering out of something that came out of your youth and your own personal backgrounds. So I'm wondering how or if this can be sort of brought to other people, or how can you instill this kind of motivation in other people, and how can this volunteer attitude, getting outside yourself, the anti-me-ism, if you would, are there thoughts about how this can be encouraged?
I think it's happening, albeit slowly. As I was wrapping up my remarks for this, I was thinking about how I think we as a country are moving in, and our government too, is that there are going to be a lot more public-private partnerships, and a lot of the solutions to challenges that we face locally are going to require us to come together in ways that maybe we haven't thus far in our either neighborhoods or... I don't mean to discount what we've done in the past, but I think you point out something very critical. And the more each of us, it's like that pebble in that pond. You know, you throw a pebble into a pool and the ripple effect goes out. So I think we were asked to do this. I had no idea what it would mean. I'm stunned that you've showed up. And, you know, this may just be the start of conversations that each of us have with the people that... travel in our circles and work with us no matter where we are in trying to solve issues. It could be a homeowners association, it could be tenants with a landlord, it could be all sorts of things. That's all I can suggest. Anybody else?
Just
Wiley?
Two quick comments. One, you know, for me, Peace Corps was really pivotal and, I mean, set me on my track for the rest of my life. And yet my motivation for going in was purely self-serving initially. I mean, I'd love to say I was out to save the world, but the reality was I didn't know what else to do, and it sounded like a great adventure, and it was in the course of it that I discovered more about what I was interested in. Second thing is, as One World Children's Fund recruits volunteers, one of its more successful events is something put on by the Volunteer Center, which is listed on the handout, and it's a chance for people who are interested in being board members of nonprofits to meet and talk to a wide range of nonprofits in the Bay Area and decide whether there are any of those that they'd be interested in engaging with. And I would say more than half of the people that have expressed interest that we've run into through that program are young professionals who have come from another country, from Asia or India, Pakistan, South America, and for an activity, a volunteering activity that we used to think of probably wrongly as more of a European, Anglo, you know, type of motivation. It's clearly catching fire all over the world. And so I think that's a really hopeful sign.
And that's called Board Match.
Board Match. Yep.
And
what
it's
did I say it was?
Volunteer
Match. You didn't. It comes, the Volunteer Center supports it, but it, if you want to go online, it's on that handout, it's Board Match.
Hi.
Hi, my name is Anya, and my two cents on this is pretty much every job I've held in the U.S. is because I started volunteering with them first. Mm-hmm. They did not have a volunteer program or a project. I went there, I said, you have this, I can help because I'm an MBA from another country. I don't want to go through the whole college process just to get a job. So it is actually a really good, almost foolproof method if you are focused. And I shifted my industry very recently to the environment industry, and here it does take longer because you have to prove yourself, you have to prove your passion. So my question is, I've been volunteering for 6 months while my papers were getting processed because I'm in the process of getting a green card and you can't work in the interim. So I thought this would be an awesome time to, you know, change my industry. So I've been volunteering. They love me. They offered me a job. I have been doing this for 6-7 months now where I am the lowest on the totem pole, taking a lot of orders. This job would kind of put me 3 levels above what I was doing. So my question is, for your brother Chris, he might be able to answer it better, but you guys can help me out here. How do you change your relationships that you have? Because till now, they have been extremely casual. People just come and say, hey, can you help out? And I do it. And now it's going to be, well, you have to do it. I've never had a problem with doing what has been asked of me, but they might have to change the way they approach me. I might have to change the way I'm saying yes to everything right now because I have to hold back and only do a certain number of hours, which I'm not doing right now. Yeah. So
to me, it seems I'd look for another opportunity. You've got so much to offer. Find an organization maybe a little smaller where they need a scrappy individual who's going to come in and run circles around them and let them see what you can do. Honestly, in the consulting business that I've done, you know, there's an individual who I think the world of and consider a mentor. I went to them and said, hey, I see that you've got this business challenge. I'm going to give you my time for free, and it's going to be a win-win for both of us because it's going to be a test for me. Do I want to do it, and am I motivated to do it on my own? And they benefited from the operational efficiencies from having me there.
But I kind of already got the job. Now I'm trying to transition into an employee rather than a volunteer. So
I'll jump in on this one. And what I the parallel for my experience would be just simply getting promotions as I've worked for different cities and going from the point of being coworkers to being someone's supervisor. Mm-hmm. And in my experience, it's really just important to be you, and you've had the relationships. I think people understand pretty quickly that you're in a new position and there's new responsibilities and expectations that come with that. But if they don't, just be very clear, I've been really happy to help you in the past, and I got this great experience. Right now, I don't have, these are my responsibilities, and this is what I can do, but I don't have the capacity to do that. And I just be upfront with people and set the limits, because otherwise, if you keep saying yes, you're going to be sunk.
And then find another volunteer to come in behind you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for being here today. It's inspiring to see a whole family involved in this huge volunteering effort. I guess I'm asking this question. I'm a little too short for this thing. I think I'm asking this question mainly for students of mine. I'm an instructor. I'm teaching college. And at the end of every spring term, I must have 200 students come my way to look for internships. And in California, we are obviously recruiting as often as possible in the international community for students to come and study here. It makes more money for the schools. And we have this very large international population that are trying to find the internships, which, of course, are in competition for our native born students as well. So there's a lot of people going for internships, and they're young people from high school age. I'm going to say from 17 to 24, 25 years old. And your histories that you were talking about kind of put your beginning in volunteering pretty much in that area, right? So here's two questions. First of all, how to help international students in the United States find the internships, but the other part of my question is I'm also seeing student-wise a lot of people coming out of the military, mm-hmm. people who have lost their employment due to the recession, people that are coming back into the job market after maybe raising their families. So there's volunteering for the young people, the kids, and volunteering for the older people. What's the great difference there, and can you give us a little detail on what it's like for the volunteering for the older person coming into? That's a big kind of question there, isn't it?
It is big. I think one of the interesting things for me from my association with One World Children's Fund is realizing how much the employment model has shifted. Since I was in school, since I was out of school, I came through a very traditional kind of background. You were expected to go to certain kinds of schools for certain kind of training, and at the end of your schooling, you'd be offered jobs and you'd be off and running. It's kind of a boring thing when I repeat it, but it was much more comforting. And I think the world today, and particularly in this economy, is very different. And the people, the inspiring thing about what we see, the way we see a lot of our volunteers working, is that a lot of that structure just doesn't matter anymore. It's like, here's the problem. What can you do to solve the problem? And I'm not that facile with the internet and some of the new social networking technology, but it's amazing what information can be generated in a short period of time. And it's just the idea, it's, well, okay, here's the problem. You know, what can I find out about it? And then what can I do with that information to put another opportunity together? I think with students from overseas, particularly if they don't have a work visa or they're not citizens or have a work permit, it's really tough because by law they can't make any money. They could get experience, but they're not allowed to earn anything until they have a work visa. So that right away is a real problem. The woman that Janet mentioned earlier, who now works for One World, spent a year working for us on an unpaid basis. And when we had a position, we were able to sponsor her for a visa, and then that totally changed it. But for the others, it takes somebody saying, I'm good at this, this is what I'd like to do, and beating the bushes, going out and talking to people and convincing them. And I'm saying this, and I know for some people that's not hard. For other people, it's a huge...
Yeah,
it's a big issue, but I don't see an alternative.
So sorry,
at this point.
I'd chime in and just say I think two opportunities on, and again these are online communities for making the connection. But Spark.com is wonderful, as well as Taproot because it's project based work. So Sparked, you know, again, more often than not, they're very small. Nonprofits that are looking for, you know, they're putting out a business plan, they're putting out a marketing communication, they're putting out, hey, what do you think of this? But I think if a student is motivated, they can structure those initiatives and those projects into tactical things that they can put on their resume and experience. I actually recommended a Scripps, a recent graduate who wanted to get into email marketing, but she hadn't tested any of the technologies. I said, go find a nonprofit who needs an email marketing tool and implement it for them, and that will give you the experience. You can put it on your resume, and that'll get you one step in the door so you're competing. And then Taproot's wonderful because it's project-based, and so they can be working with others. And again, it's volunteer, but I think that's an interesting opportunity. But also right now, the challenge of finding internships is difficult for any organization, any college or university with students.
Particularly paid ones, but I would say there's no end to challenges and problems
right
that are out there. So, you know, if those people can find something that they want to solve, or someone can help them define something to tackle, that's a wonderful thing to do.
For some of them, there may be a chance to have a small group of them get together and decide they're going to start an informal company or enterprise on their own for, you know, 2 to 3 months for a summer, and just look around their community and decide where is help needed, what are the skills that they have or their interests, and sell themselves. I mean, just the experience of putting that together and figuring out how they go and identify needs and how they'd approach people ought to be of help to them. But I realize we're talking about rifle shots in different areas. There's no global solution, I don't think, right now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Since there are two people patiently standing, if you can ask real quick questions, and we'll probably get fairly quick answers, and then we'll have to adjourn.
Thank you.
I'll try to be as succinct as possible. Hi, I'm Colton. I'm a third-year undergraduate student at UCLA. I'm currently majoring in a very interdisciplinary sort of studies right now because I'm sort of struggling with finding out what I like, sort of. And I know that volunteering would be like a really great way to facilitate that. So I guess my question is, do you recommend, I was looking at Peace Corps as sort of a way of possibly you know, fulfilling my volunteering experience, do you recommend jumping into the Peace Corps right after undergraduate, whereas you won't have, because I know that that's what, is that what the three of you have done, but I know that it's probably, Peace Corps has probably evolved since that time in certain ways, or do you recommend?
There's a lot more people that go into the Peace Corps now that aren't going straight out of college, but it's still got to be the predominant model that people follow.
We have someone in the audience that was at the University of Michigan when Kennedy made his statement, and she didn't go into the Peace Corps until how many years later? Turned 60 in Peace Corps. So, but I think the advantage, the reason I would recommend doing it early, is that especially if you are sort of, as Wiley described, clueless about what direction to take, if you have a good language skill like this woman does, and you have that to offer, and you have an interest in overseas development or work, that's the time to do it.
Okay.
It really is.
And I would just add to that, Janet, that it's a deferment for student loans.
Oh, right.
It's a wonderful time to be with other bright young new graduates as they're kind of considering what direction to go into. Mm-hmm. There's higher education graduate school opportunities that are available to you through the Peace Corps Service.
And there's preference for hiring with the federal government. So thank you very much. The points were that if you do go into the Peace Corps right now, this is for the radio, you do get deferral of your student loans. You get preference with the federal government in terms of hiring. And the third one was?
You're with other
people that are in the same boat. Yeah. So I'd go. And our last question.
I was hoping to answer that woman's question who just took off. Mm. But I think that it's very overrated to approach only large firms for internships.
Yes.
That I work for a pretty large firm, and we have a lot of restrictions on how we find our interns, how we pay our interns. I highly recommend seeking out small businesses and minority-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of organizations where you can go and meet them in groups and actually just approach them and say, hey, I don't necessarily need a big paycheck. I don't need a paycheck at all. But, I'd like an opportunity. And a lot of times it's the small firms that will let you wear all the hats you want.
Exactly.
You can learn anything that you, but larger firms, a lot of red tape. So that's what I was wondering.
Thank you so much. That's a wonderful way to end.
Excellent input. I'm grateful for our audience, and particularly also, of course, our speakers. So, I wish more of our speakers had a family meeting before they came here. I think it would be a big plus. So. But once again, our thanks to Wiley and Janet Gregg and their daughters, Libby DeMeo and Jessica Manzi, for their presentations. And we thank our radio audience. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California in its 109th year of enlightened discussion is adjourned.